your source for everything paranormal. Para-X. The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Everybody, and welcome. You know, I've really been looking forward to tonight's show, but beyond that, you know, every cloud has a silver lining, because today I had to go to the dentist, and he pulled a tooth out, and it hurts. But two of my favorite people are with me. I mean, our guest is Philip Earl Johnson, also known as Mooney, and I've been looking for that, like, change of pace, breath of fresh air in more ways than one, because it's time that we need to sit back and forget what's going on in this world for, you know, an hour and just have some fun. So that I was looking forward to, but then, you know how it feels when you've been to the dentist, and I thought, I can't do a whole lot of talking tonight. So I kind of twisted my friend Sam's arm, Sam Miller, and you know she's been on here talking about Haunted Disney and all kinds of stuff before, and I kind of twisted her arm and asked her if she could kind of help be my mouthpiece tonight, and kicking and screaming, but she did.
So she's I did.
Here. You did. And the blessing here is that Sam and Philip go way, way back, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But let me just say that for those of you who haven't heard when Philip was on my show talking about the magic of laughter, he's a Chicago-based performer, an actor, a storyteller, who's performed his show Mooney, Juggler, Rope, Walker, Foolish Mortal, over 7,500 times at Renaissance fairs and other venues all over the United States. And now, since the Ren fairs have been canceled this year, and a lot of us are having Mooney withdrawal, I figured that it would be great if he would come on and you know, give us a little bit of something called Mooney Tales. So I want you everybody to hunker down and get comfortable. And if you start feeling a very strange sensation in your face during the show, really, don't panic. It's just that big smile that's been tucked away lately, and it's making a comeback. So, Philip, Sam, thank you so much for being here tonight, and welcome.
Oh, thank you. It's always comforting to be back at the Cauldron.
Yes. I somehow feel like I never left.
Well, she keeps it, you know, room temperature, so it's kind of a nice place to splash around, right?
It sure is.
Mm-hmm. Shimmering.
Well, but before we get started, I want to just say that in case people don't believe, like I said, in the power of the universe of manifestation, both of you, not strangers to each other, are here with me tonight. And from a metaphysical sense, Sam, even though you were, you know, fighting tooth and nail, and thank you for that. I think it was meant to be. So would either of you just like to explain a little bit about how far back your friendship goes and, you know, where it started?
Oh, gosh. I'd worked fairs since the early 60s and had always watched Mooney's show. And I remember one year over 20 years ago, I was interested in getting his headshots and his information to some of the producers at Disney Studios, because they were casting for some performers and stuff like that. And I went backstage and asked him, and the rest is sort of history.
Yes, and it was lovely that Sam was interested. Unfortunately, nobody else was, but it was nice that somebody at least, you know, pitched the Frisbee up in the air, you know, even if nobody caught it.
Mm-hmm. Well, producers, you know, sometimes they can't see what's right in front of their, can't see what's in front of their eyes.
Yeah, they don't know. What are they?
That just gave him more time to do Ren Faris and entertain us all really happily. And, you know, that's a good thing. And I'm glad that you guys got together because I got to meet you too. So both of you, actually. It's funny how people get together. It's just really, really strange, but in a very good way.
Yes. And we, you know, it started with that, but we, you know, over the years, we've actually gotten to be closer friends and see each other outside the fair and go to Disneyland and eat ice cream and have lunch.
And talk magic. You know, and
talk magic. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We do. Serendipity. Yes, we do.
Yeah. And I'm, you know, at right now I like these three caballeros working tonight together. I do. I like to be part of your gang too. So that's really nice. Thank you. All right. So I mentioned a minute ago about things like Mooney's show and people that absolutely love it. But while most people know about fairy tales, tall tales, wagging tales, and folk tales, some might never have heard of a Mooney tale. So Phil, what are Mooney tales and how did they come to be?
I got interested in storytelling about 6 years, actually longer than that ago, but it didn't really occur to me that it would be something that I would like to do. But about 6 years ago, I started thinking, hey, I could do this if I just start. But how do you start? And so I just asked permission to have a stage slot and start telling stories about things that had happened in my life. And as I didn't have a template. Like I didn't have a class. I didn't, and now there's classes and all of that, but I just started doing it. Like, but luckily I had repeated opportunities to keep going at it. And over time, over the last 6 years, it's really kind of evolved into more of a comedy sort of a way of presenting, a comedic way of telling the stories. Like in the beginning, I just was sort of just an interesting thing that happened to me, but as I've gotten refined in not only the writing but in the performing of them, I find myself oddly, maybe not so oddly, being more interested in the comic element of it. But I still have a great affection for stories that aren't funny that people tell, but I tend to focus more on the sort of funny stuff that has happened.
Yeah. And, you know, it's just kind of interesting that you call them Mooney tales because Mooney, the character, doesn't speak really well until he comes out of his, you know, from behind the curtain. You know, so you going from mute to comedy, but you're still Mooney. So Mooney has two different sides.
Yeah. But it's in a way it's sort of marketing because it's at the Renaissance Fair, you know. And so, like, if I called it stories by some guy you don't know, I might get a smaller audience than Mooney tales. Like, it's just like, hey, Mooney's talking now. Why don't you come on over? You know, it's like it's really just so serving. Like, it's just it's a better name than story time. You know, like it just doesn't.
It turns out, though, that Mooney is a magnificent bard, because when you stand up there and tell those tales, it's just magic.
Well, it is.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
I'm not blowing smoke either. I mean, they're truly well done.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there's a craft to it too. It's not just get up there and telling them. There's writing involved, and to write them and then learn them in a way so as to be able to tell them in a way that doesn't sound like you've memorized it. There's some technique that I had to learn, but I kind of had to invent it for myself.
Well, having been in the audience, it's not just you telling the stories, it's that you include the audience. You make mm-hmm. them a part of the story. They can actually believe that they're sitting there watching you, you know, run around this room doing all these wonderful things that you did back in your, you know, 20s and 30s, and you actually put them in that space. You're not just talking to them. You're bringing them in. And that's a real, that's a real gift.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. And I guess that's kind of, that's what I want to do with Mooney too. Like the regular silent Mooney show is mm-hmm. it's all about the connection. It's all about bringing the audience on stage, whether they're actually on stage, which I do bring people a lot on stage, whether it's bringing them on in reality or whether it's just bringing on their imaginations on stage and having them live through the people who I do bring on stage. You want to have people inside the story, not outside the story, looking at it, but being inside the story, looking out and going, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm right here in the middle of this story. That's storytelling. That's good. That's, you know, that's what good television does, good film.
Well, and that's your gift too, because, you know, it's, you know, sometimes if there's someone who's not getting it while they're up there, if you have a problem making the show actually happen the way that it usually does, you know, and you have to change right then, right now, and work with that person. And, you know, and if, what if it, you know, doesn't really want to happen, you know, what do, you know?
Well, you just make it up as you go. But I learned a long time ago that, if somebody, I don't mean this in a derogatory way, and I don't think it'll sound really derogatory, but it may sound a little derogatory, but in my mind, if somebody isn't, if it isn't happening with that person, and it could be for many different reasons. Maybe they just have anxiety, or maybe they're not, maybe they want to take over and be, and do their own thing. But I mm-hmm. call them in my mind. I go, uh-oh, we got a show killer. So if and someone is a show killer, is someone who's outside the rhythm of the experience that we are all on. You know, if you're in a boat on a river or on a lake, you can feel that rhythm of how the waves go, and that's how audiences are as well. And every audience has its own different rhythm, and it's based on the time of day. What the temperature is, how many people are out there, how much alcohol is in the
truly,
room, how many children are in the room, everything. They're all tiny little contributors, some major contributors to the cauldron of that particular show. And you have to learn. And so some people just are outside the rhythm of that particular show, and you just throw them back. And at first, the audience is like, oh, no.
And I've seen you do that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure.
I've seen you throw them back.
Yeah. Well, let's be clear. It's not like a chuck or a hurl. It's more of a leading back.
Get off my stage. No, it's not a chuck.
It's not a chuck.
And then you go shopping again and you find someone new.
Absolutely. It's just like Target. You'll get a new one.
It's kind of, yeah, and you know, you're talking about magic, and really what you do is magical, but you mentioned magic a minute ago. Do you possess any magic?
I think we all possess, I'm not just going to sound like a trope, it's going to sound a little pablum-y, you know, we all possess a little magic, you know, but I really do believe that we do possess a little bit of magic, and that, because to me, like, the real magic that we have as human beings is our intuition, you know, and I think that we can develop that intuition of who is around us, what energy is around us, signs that are sent to us in the form of animals or odd coincidences, which I don't believe in, you know, and the magic that the more we develop our intuition and the more we trust that, the more magical those moments are when we make those connections of like, that was a thing that I can't explain, but I just know that it's real. And to me, that is the magic that I have. And I have developed in my show. It's very, very, it's a crucial part mm-hmm. of my show. One of the most important parts of my show is intuition, because I pull people up on stage and I don't pick anyone in advance, and I have to go out there and I use my intuition. And it's the only little bit of real magic. I don't do magic in my show, like the kind of magic that, you know, like magicians do, like stage magicians, which is all sleight of hand and tricks. Mm-hmm. But it is, the illusion is quite magical, but it isn't actual magic per se. I mean, who's to say what it is really? But I think that the magic that I have is that kind of intuition. I do say that in the beginning of my first show, I say, like, you know, I try to get the crowd whipped up, and I say, I come on out, and like four people clap, and I'm like, no, you know, this is a magic moment. You know, this is not card trick magic. We're talking first crush, first kiss magic. That's the kind of magic that we're talking about. I had my like coincidence. I was talking about coincidence. I don't really believe in coincidence, but it's by odd coincidence that my first kiss in real life was with my girlfriend Darlene. This was back in high school, and my first movie kiss was with and I have to say it's my only movie kiss, but my first movie kiss was also with an actress named Darlene as well. Was in a movie. It was in a movie that I was ultimately cut out of. But the scene,
you kissed your way out. Okay.
I don't know. I only had like one or two lines. My part was irrelevant, I guess. But anyway,
because you weren't juggling.
Apparently I was, because apparently I was the character was married, and I was messing around with the female lead's best friend, who they both worked in this office, and it was my office, this architecture. So anyway, did this long shot, you know, this long shot camera, like shot on the camera where the cameraman is following the main character. She's going through this Christmas party that is she's looking for Darlene, right? And that's not her character's name. But anyway, she's searching for Darlene, and we are in like the supply closet where the paper and the toner and the ink is, you know, dirty.
Behind the sign, yeah.
Yeah, making out, right? And so, you know, so that we don't have to be making out the whole time, because it's like literally a minute shot that ends with her opening the door and seeing her and I in a clinch, you know, making out, right? So the camera, and Michael Keaton, the actor, Michael Keaton's the director, right? And so there's like a radio inside the room, so that he goes, you know, we're about 5 seconds before the camera is going to find us inside the room. We hear Michael go, okay, Phil and Darlene go. And Darlene and I have been in this room, just the two of us talking. We don't know each other, but she clearly has had more movie kisses than I have. Because we've just been chatting like folks at a carnival who don't know each other, right? And then at the sound of Michael Keaton go, Phil and Darlene go, she literally takes her hands without, and she doesn't do anything. None of this is worked out. We didn't work out anything. She pulls her skirt up to her waist so you can see her panties. She lifts her leg and wraps it around my back and pulls my head and sticks her tongue down my throat. What I did was something to the opposite of that. I basically like arched my back, like, what has happened? Where has this octopus come from? Like, it was a terrible acting, just awful. And so we hear Michael go, okay, cut. All right, back to one. Back to one. Let's do it again. What they were looking for was Phil recoiling in horror as the girl who he was making out with leaps upon him and shoves her tongue down his throat. It was
See, you clearly needed rehearsal. You clearly needed a rehearsal.
I needed rehearsal.
A run through. You needed a run through.
Some idea that this was going to be a mounting. Rather, I was kind of thinking we would just be, it would be a tender, romantic, passionate kiss, not a mount. I wasn't ready.
Oh my God! All right. So, what was the name of that movie so we can watch it and just imagine that happening at a certain point?
It's called The Merry Gentleman, and Michael Keaton starred in it, and it was his directorial debut. I don't know how you would see it. It must be possible to see it somewhere.
You never know. If any of us come across it, then we can say, well, we knew somebody who was almost in there and got mauled by an octopus. And that in of itself is a really good story.
Yeah. But she was really nice. It was like she did anything wrong. It was me. I was the inexperienced, Cub Scout. It was like, literally, she should have just taken my Cub Scout cap off right before shooting, you know? Like, oh, my gosh.
Oh, funny. Well, that was a very kind of a magical experience. But so I know that you know people who are magical. You hang out with a couple of people that I know of.
I do. I know a few.
So have you experienced things that you believe were magic or are magic?
Oh, definitely. I had a litter of friends, not in the exact words, predict that this, what we're going through now with the coronavirus was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't specific. It was very general. And it was about me because I was having some questions about some things that were going on. And she basically said, I don't know what it is, but it's this, this, and this. And the things that she couldn't be any more specific than that, but she told me, and all the things she said hit exactly with what was coming, what is happening now. So, I mean, to me, that's like, how I could possibly have any idea about any of that, but somehow she knew. She didn't know what the specifics were, but she felt this big shift coming, this big change. And mm-hmm. she made some recommendations to me, which I took to heart. So that's one example, which was pretty amazing and powerful to me.
It is. And you know what? Well, to follow up with that, I've had a lot of guests on the show in the last maybe year and a half, that have also been talking about a shift. And they didn't get into any detail either. But every one of them, and they were people that didn't know each other. They came from all kinds of different places. But everybody said the same thing. Sam, have you heard that too amongst your people?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Absolutely. The web, you know, everybody's been weaving that web to try to understand what's going on and to catch what little tidbits that they can. And it's just, it's in the air. It's become part of the fabric of what everyone is feeling. And it's been coming for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. People with, but you're like, and I think you're referring to kind of people you're talking to or this friend of mine. And I count you two amongst these people that I know, these people who have this deep intuition that goes deeper than just themselves and just their immediate surroundings, but is connected on a deeper level to culture, to the country, to community, and that deep connection. It's interesting that so many people who have that deep intuition that they can't really explain exactly or explain more specifically about what it, but they're all feeling a similar thing. That's magic. Like that's magic right there.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are just more empathic that way.
Yeah, like you, really empathic.
It's a gift.
It's a blessing
and a curse.
And a curse, yeah, because you just feel everything. But
I did have a moment that I had a magical moment with me that I can't really explain. Maybe you guys can help me.
Mm-hmm.
Is that long ago? It was the opening day of a Renaissance. It was before I even had my own show, and I was sneezing all day, literally, for 12 hours. Mm. Sneezing and draining. I was having some sort of an allergic reaction. And one of my really good friends was there that day, and we were supposed to go out to dinner, and I'm like, I can't. Like, I was in misery. Like, I don't have allergies. That's the other thing. I don't have allergies or anything like that. I never did. I still don't. But I had this one day. I just wouldn't stop. And he said, well, let me come over after work. I'll come over to where you're staying, and then I'll work on you, because he's a healer, right? Mm-hmm. And he had me lay down on the bed, and he took the it was one of those, you know, long-handled hairbrushes, mm-hmm. and he took it and pushed it in between each of my toes. I laid on my stomach, and he worked in between my toes. Now, that sounds like a bizarre thing. Like, how does anyone know? Who trains someone to do this? Like, if my dog is sick, I'm like, maybe I should massage right behind its back knee. Like, I don't know how. Somehow he knew, right? You know, so he takes this end of the hairbrush, and starts pushing it between my toes, and I'm screaming because I'm a Nancy. Like, I pain in me. I'm bad. I'm bad with pain. Like, thank God I don't have to give birth. And I seriously, I would take that. Give me the drugs. But he's pushing these things, and I'm screaming, and he's like, I'm not even pushing. Stop it. Stop screaming. And he goes through all my toes, and he says, all right, now rest, just concentrate. And then he goes and does it again, and it doesn't hurt anymore. And he pushed really hard. He said, I'm pushing a lot harder this time, and it didn't hurt. And he goes through all in between all of my toes again. And just like that, the draining and the sneezing stopped. I was 100% cured, and we went out to dinner.
It's magic, and it's like, healing.
That's nuts.
It's hairbrush Reiki. That's what it is.
Is that what Reiki is?
Yeah.
Is Reiki like pushing between your toes? Because I'll go back for a second.
No.
Reiki is a healing modality. You heal without touching. It's Japanese in nature, and it kind of works with the chi in your body and everything. And you can do it distance Reiki. You can do it up front, up close and personal. I've not had any experience with a hairbrush in Reiki, but you know, it all kind of goes into it, locks into your system. It's that what ethereal, Sam, the ethereal body around you that kind of opens up and allows.
It is. Like it's opening up an area that needs to be healed, because our bodies store stress and problems and pain in different areas that you'd never think, you know. You know, if you're mad at somebody and you wonder, you know, why your ankle is aching, you know, things settle. And some people are just instinctive, and they know, and they're empathic, and they know where some of these pressure points are. I mean, let's face it, you're a wire walker, Phil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You put a lot of pressure on your feet, and you balance and you juggle, and a lot of your body pressures and stuff go into your lower extremities and into your feet. So it makes perfect sense to me. A lot of that stress and with problems would be there.
Well, this was before I had my show. I was doing the mud show back then.
Well, it knew it was coming.
That's
your feet were empathic. They knew it was coming.
Well, it is. It is actually painful to walk on a tightrope. If you were trying to do, I couldn't do it on my bare feet. No. I'm sure some people can, but I cannot do it. It's too painful.
Yes, but you have adorable boots.
Yes, Mooney boots.
Well, you have Mooney boots.
Those are I always dedicate my boots to my kids. They're always designed with some element of my kids involved.
And I think I'm going to jump in right now because we're talking about the show so much. But if they go to your Facebook, there are pictures. There are some videos on your Facebook page. So why don't you give out that information so people can actually see you in action?
Oh, you mean videos of my show?
Mm-hmm. There's little snippets that people have posted and stuff.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I think it's really my I unfortunately I don't use the Mooney page as much. I pretty much stick with the Philip Earl Johnson page. Mm-hmm. Philip Earl Johnson with one L, Philip Earl Johnson. But YouTube really is like a really good resource. You could just search for Mooney.
YouTube is filthy with Mooney videos.
Yeah, lots of them. That's
yeah, they just they've got all sorts.
Yeah.
And so yeah, if anybody has also,
Mooney
withdrawal,
also on Twitter too.
Yeah, it's
Mooney's on Twitter too.
Oh, okay. See, and I mean, guys, we're sitting home, you know, like here in California, we've got 3 months more to look forward to sitting home. And, you know, after a while, you want something different. You can only watch, you know, Judge Judy too many times or whatever. And so, you know, yeah, YouTube is it's kind of I do a lot of YouTube watching right now because they just have really interesting, nice things. But, yeah, go and have a look because next year – God willing, when this ban is lifted, you know, Philip is Mooney all over the country. And you might really want to go see him in action because it's an amazingly funny, wonderful show. And yeah, so go take a peek while you got nothing better to do, guys. And you won't be sorry you did. All right, now I'm through advertising for you. I'm like beating a drum, right? But
yeah.
And that, okay, so you're such a person of many talents. Do you drum? Because I know you're very talented in so many ways. Do you drum? Are you a drummer?
Yeah, no, I'm not a drummer. I mean, if you were in my basement, if you were hanging on my basement, you'd be like, as a drummer. I have drums. I even have like an old Pearl drum set that I got used from Brune's wife when she left Chicago and moved to California to be Mrs. Brune. And that's still in my basement, but I'm not really a drummer, but I always loved drums. And probably why I added that drum bit into my shows is because I thought it was outdoor cool and being in a drum circle was cool, but I just don't really have a lot of talent for it. But I had a kind of a magical experience with a drum back in, my gosh, early on in my life. I went to this these drum makers house with another performer, and we went to stay there. They were friends of his, and we went there for a few days and hung out and, you know, smoked a little weed and ate good food and did some drumming, and they made these beautiful drums, right? And one time we were drumming on this drum circle, And I was pounding on this one particular drum, pound, blah, 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 you know, for quite a while. You don't have to be a great drummer to be in a drum circle. You just have to have hands, you know. So I qualified. And I had this bracelet on, this white bracelet. I'd had it on for a couple of years, and it never came off. It was just tied in like fabric. And so anyway, I was pounding and pounding and pounding. And afterwards, I noticed that it was on the floor, and it had just come untied after 2 years while pounding on this drum. And I said, it's kind of odd that came off. And the drum makers were like, no, you see the colors on the drum. The way the drum is made, it had some fabric wrapped around it, and it was wrapped with red and white fabric. Around the drum, and they said those were the Shongu colors. Shongu is an African god of war, and they said that's not a coincidence. That was it came off as a sign, and I was like, oh my gosh, you know. So like, this is amazing. And so we smoked some more pot, and they're like, that drum
that helped.
That drum is yours. It should be yours. And so I bought it for $250. So like, it was a sign that
foolish mortal. Foolish mortal.
Exactly. It was a sign that the guy with $250 just walked in the room. And it's still in my basement, like just hardly playing.
All right, we're going to drum away for a minute because we're going to take a quick break. So everybody, we'll be back in about two.
Stirring the Cauldron, we'll be right back. So don't go away.
If you end up with webbed feet,
remember, you've been warned.
Hey there. I don't know if you've heard, but there's a great new radio show on Para X. Two hosts, 1 hour, and too much fun. Stephanie and Heidi not only talk about the latest goings-on in the supernatural worlds, they live it. They want to hear from you. They want to help you understand and guide you. And they want you to tune in. So, grab a friend or come alone to gather around that metaphysical table with Heidi and Stephanie. If you're interested in the worlds of the unseen, tune in to The Gathering Radio Show, Tuesdays at 9 p.m. Eastern on Para X Radio.
You've no doubt heard of Tango and Cash, Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, perhaps It Takes Two to Tango. Well now, on the first and third Thursdays of each month, there's a show called Tango and Friends at 8 p.m. Eastern on the Para-X Radio Network with your host, Bruce Tango. And yes, there will be at least two to tango on each episode, sometimes even more. There's going to be lots of topics and lots of guests you'll all know and lots of surprises. Tango and Friends every first and third Thursday of the month at 8 p.m. right here on the Para X Radio Network.
Missed an episode of Stirring the Cauldron? Then be sure to check out MarlaBrooks.com and check out the archive. And while you're there, check out Marla's weekly Witch's Oracle card reading. Explore the site to find many great resources, such as information on tarot, oracle readings, metaphysical consultations, and links to all of Marla's books. That's MarlaBrooks.com. Welcome back to Stirring the Cauldron. Once again, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
I said it before and I'll say it again, that intro music to come back makes me want to grab a staff and start marching into a war somewhere. I don't know. It invigorates me, I guess, or something. But
onward
anyway.
And upward.
Well, that's exactly kind of what it is, yeah. But, you know, I love Mike Lear for putting that on for me, but it just, the first time I heard it, it was like, huh? Where's the mark? I'll open the gates.
Yeah. I'll get you, my pretty.
There you go. Absolutely. So, I keep meaning to tell you this, Phil, but, you know, we talked about Mooney being a mute character. Like, you know, I kind of compare you to Harpo Marx doing that because, like, when you whistle words and people can hear exactly what you're saying through a whistle. I mean, it's really wonderful. And I told this to Sam, a few months ago, but there are birds in the yard here. I call them Mooney birds because they whistle exactly like you and you can hear words coming out of them.
Are you saying I ripped off the birds? Like, my God,
no.
Everywhere you turn, somebody's got...
They're going to ask for royalties. I don't know. You know, I swear to you, the first time I heard it, I did a double take because I said, wait, no, that was Phil. You know, and then no, that's the bird outside. And then it did it again. And it was like, you know, like when you whistle, thank you. It was
right.
Right. And I'm like, oh, this is too creepy. Absolutely too creepy. So,
yeah,
so,
well, I actually had a friend email me last night with a video that was taken so I could hear the birds that she said every day she wakes up and hears those birds and also think so. You actually are not alone in that feeling.
Good, because I was beginning
never,
to worry.
I've never heard those birds.
Well, yeah. Well, geez, you're going to have to come over here one of these days and just sit and listen because they
I
are.
I guess so.
Yeah. I mean,
it blew past me.
Yeah, it was like that, especially that thank you whistle.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the one I heard, and I'm like, oh wow, we haven't seen him in a long time. You know, he's coming in spirit now.
But, I don't know. I kind of like when he whistles. Just stay there. Don't move.
Can make him do it.
Well, the whistle has become obviously like inseparable from my identity as a performer.
Mm-hmm.
And I never, you know, that whistle was, I didn't know how to whistle. Like for the first, say, 5 or 6 years of doing the show, I developed the whistle because I was moved to a bigger stage. Where what I was doing before, which I used to go like this, and direct people like that, but you couldn't hear it in the back row. So I'm like,
it didn't carry far enough. Yeah.
Didn't carry. So I learned the whistle, and then the whistle talking kind of just evolved by accident, and then I started, you know, then I just started adding more words and more vocabulary. And it is definitely, you know, people recognize me in public if I whistle. I've had people, I was actually doing a play at the Goodman Theater in Chicago last year. It was a Shakespeare play. And I had done one at the Goodman the year before. And I had the crew downstairs, all and I got to know everybody. And well, I worked there a few times, so I know everybody. Anyway, I had worked with this one woman who did the wigs and the hairstyling. And then the second year, the one I did last year, was a Shakespeare play. I was asked to write some songs and said that I would sing in the play. The character had songs, so they asked me to write the music and actually write one full song that was not even Shakespeare and perform that as well. But in one of those songs, I added some whistle into the song because it was a song that was mentioning birds a number of times. So instead of talking about birds, I just whistled like those birds. Right. And in rehearsal in the tech, that wig woman who I had worked with, and I had the main character of the play before. So I had seen her a lot, worked with her a lot. And she said, she heard the whistle through the monitor and was like, wait, I know that whistle. What is that? And she kept thinking, she's like, that's Mooney. And then she's like, why is Mooney here? And then she realized, like, oh my God, Phil is Mooney. I didn't even realize that. So she had worked with me for many times before, and she had seen me at the fair, but she didn't put it together that the actor who was doing this, like, you know, serious play was also the clown boy who whistles outside Marla's window.
That's funny. I mean, you're noted for many things.
Well, it's not always the whistle that's a dead giveaway. Do you remember when we were out at Disneyland one day and you were just standing there talking, you made some gesture, and from yon hill over there, somebody goes, Mooney? Remember?
Wow. Yeah.
People come running up, Mooney? You know? Yeah. It's just something that you did.
Oh my God! Yeah.
You are beloved of your your audience.
Yes, all seven people.
Yes.
Yeah. Put several zeros.
Well, six if I take the dog back home. Yeah.
No, it's amazing because you know, when we're at the fair and you know you're walking around, people just gravitate to you like a magnet, and you're not. You know, yes, you're telling everybody what time the next show is going to be and stuff like that. But sometimes you're just kind of walking, you know, from point A to point B. And you're like a magnet. You get just covered in people.
The whistle helps.
Well, and it's the fa-la.
Now it's going to be in my head.
The fa-la.
Oh, yeah. It's like a small world.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean
no,
to bring it.
No, that's all right. It's fine. For those who don't know, there is one part of the act where that it's the flower, right? He makes like a little what do you call it, with flowers.
Paper flower, a little paper flower.
A little paper flower. He has somebody up there. He gives her one, and she has one, and he has one. And then he pantomimes and teaches her how to make this piece of paper look like a flower, which it never does, which is really great fodder for down the line. But it comes along with the little fa-la-la. You want to fa-la-la just for a second?
Sure. Since maybe, you know, sure, why not? People might be missing it. Fa-la. Fa-la-la. 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 And so on.
Yay!
And as it goes along, and pretty soon, you know, this flower, and he makes a beautiful flower, and of course, you know, nobody knows how to do it, so that just makes it even funnier, because then, you know, there's that feigning frustration, and then, you know, trying to make, and then the person that's doing it is starting to go, oh, I can't do this, you know, and it's really, really good.
It's so, a trick, though. That's kind of a little bit of a magic trick in that, in a roundabout, unconventional way, in that it looks so easy from the audience. Mm-hmm. Like, as you watch me do it without even, I don't even have to look at it. Okay. Like, I can do it just looking at her. But what the audience doesn't realize is that the way I position my hands, and I do it on purpose, is she can't see it. She can't see the flower. You can see it, and it looks so obvious and so easy, but my hand is blocking the flower, and she's trying to follow, but she can't see it. That's what basically she's supposed to do, but she can't see it specifically. So it's a little bit of a trick in that. And you never see anyone do a good flower. Like, no. Nobody. Like, way no, more people no. throw the water on me at the end of the show than have ever been able to make the flower. Maybe 20 people in over 8,000, close to 9,000 shows, really, at this point. It's really close to 9,000 shows. And maybe 20 have made a really good flower. It's so rare.
What happens when they do? Are you kind of flabbergasted?
Yes, it kills the show. No,
it comes to a screeching halt.
It's not as funny. It's like, oh, yeah, you're good. Okay. All right, next thing.
I love you and your cheese. Yeah.
Yeah. Whatever.
Well, you know, you're so good at improvisation. I mean, something that somebody wouldn't even notice. All right, so one of the days that Sam and I were there, an airplane flew over. Now, you were, I think, tightening the tightrope or whatever, you know, doing your thing. But instinctively, you heard a plane. And it wasn't like Tattoo heard a plane, you know, not pointing it out. But you just looked up at it. And you stared at it for a minute. Everybody started laughing. You know, I mean, the timing, the expression and everything. It's all these little improvisations that make the show so interesting.
I have to like recategorize that outside the realm of improv, because that may have been the first time you saw that, but it's certainly not the first time a plane has come overhead while I've been performing, right? So here's the thing, like, even something that seems like, oh my gosh, that was totally just made up on the spot. Like, I may have done that already, maybe 4 times out of the 9,000 shows. But it's not new to me anymore. Anything I do, I could theoretically call back and use again and again and again. And that's the benefit of experience. That's the benefit of having gone through that dance so many times. The skill isn't improv. The skill is actually acting.
True.
I act like it's the first time that I have done it. Mm-hmm. And everything, sometimes something is brand new, it's the first time, and I will actually stop the show, talk, and say, in 9,000 shows, that's the first time that anyone thought to do that, and that was funny. And then I always give the participant a big round of applause. The audience gives them a big round of applause, because it's so great when one person out of thousands and thousands of people comes up with one brilliant new idea. I'm always so grateful and astounded that I feel that they deserve congratulations for that, because I didn't think of it either. Like, but it wasn't my role. You know, I'm the clown. They're the person that has to deal with what I'm telling them what to do. So, yeah. But someone does. So, you know, the skill is not, yes, sometimes it's improv, but really it's acting. Really, it's taking a thing that you know. It's like jazz. It's a thing that you've done, that you know, you've done before. Sometime in the last 30 years of your life, and pulling it back at the exact moment that you need it.
Exactly.
And making it look like it was the first time.
Mm-hmm. But that's what you do in your acting, is when you do that, when you see the plane or you hear the plane go over and you act like maybe, you know, you're hiding from it or you're looking for it. What you're doing is you're signaling to the audience that something else is happening, that something else might be coming. And you draw them in. That's exactly what you're doing. You're giving them that little cue that, uh-oh. You know, what's going on? And that's the mastery of that, what you do. Because you really, you just hook them and bring them in, even with, you know, little things like that.
Yeah, yeah. But hopefully they're already there. That's the beauty of live performance.
Oh, no, they are already there, but you're just bringing them in even more. You're giving them more than they expected.
Yes, 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 indeed. And I won't continue on with the show unless I think that they're all there. I'm not going to just do a show and have you guys just sit there and go, I'm here and that guy's doing a thing and I'm here doing my thing and I'm watching that. No, we're in this together. We're doing it together, and we don't leave the shore in the boat until almost everyone. You can't get everyone, because some people, you just can't have everyone, but the vast majority of the people there, you have to use technique and experience to get everyone in the boat and everyone on the same rhythm before we leave the shore. So,
well, you've got a lot of people in the boat, because I've seen people bring their babies in Mooney costumes
yes.
and their kids in Mooney costumes, you know, that are absolutely identical to yours. I mean, there's that detail that they're just, you know, they're embracing you so much.
It is adorable until that family's on my lawn. Then
Well, here's the other thing too that I noticed. There are people there that know the show very well. Every different scene, every different thing that you do, they know it. But they sit there and they wait and they wait. It's just so, the expectation there is so wonderful, because they just can't wait to see it again and again. And you can't say that about a lot of performers. You know, you go to see somebody once in a while and, okay, well, I've been to that show and I've been to that show. But I would bet, I don't know what the percentage would be, but probably more than 50% of the people that are there are not newbies. They come every year to every fair to see
and
you.
Know every line.
Yes.
Well,
and repeat them back.
True. I'm just grateful. Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for doing that. I'm 11. Lucky and I'm grateful for that. And but I think the main reason why people do that, I think, is because they're never sure exactly what's going to happen. It's the same show, but
that's
I don't do it the same way every time. And sometimes I have to handle things, because things don't always go as planned, and I have to handle them. And I think that's what they like the best, is uh-oh, Mooney's got to handle something, and this isn't going to be pretty.
I like the body language sometimes, one arm across the other and God knows what else. It works. It gets people's attention, and it's funny. It really is funny.
Yeah, well, clown, no one cares about clown pain. They just laugh at clown pain. So I put myself in the middle of it.
Yeah, well, you've hurt yourself in the middle of it too, clowning around once in a while.
I have, yeah,
for sure. And Joe still goes on. I mean, that's the way it has to be. Mm-hmm. We're getting close to running out of time, but before we get the proverbial hook, is there anything else you want to talk about?
Well, I wanted to say, I mean, obviously, I would be remiss to, you know, I mentioned it earlier, but we're obviously in this new time, this new paradigm shift. You know, I'm at home. I'm safe. I mean, unfortunately I can't work. All my shows are canceled.
Yeah.
Actually the next Renaissance Fair has not been canceled yet. The Bristol Renaissance Fair. We don't know. It isn't canceled. It is yet to be determined. We're all hoping it happens. Fingers mm-hmm. crossed. That being said, who knows? You know, my financial future is challenging, but you know, I'm okay today and mm-hmm. we only have today anyway. Right. So, but it's the people out there in the front lines, the health workers, the grocery workers, the essential jobs that are out there on every day and are risking being out there because they have to, and it's the right thing. So just, you know, thank you to them, especially the health workers. I have some friends who are in that profession and it's really, it is our job to be grateful for them. And I am truly grateful for them. Mm-hmm. Much love and respect to them. I have I've had some really funny, like sort of doctor moments that happened, but like one of the neatest ones that ever happened was I had torn my meniscus. I didn't know it at the time, but I had torn my meniscus and I went into this orthopedist and he asked me to tell me about it. I did it while I was dancing and any of this and this. And he said, and I said, but I need to get this looked at and fixed as quickly as possible because I'm a performer. He said, oh, well, where do you work? He said, oh, up the Renaissance Fair. He's like, do you know a guy? Yeah, I've been up there with my kids. Like, do you know a guy who walks on a tightrope and does Shakespeare on the weekends? I'm like, yeah, that's me. He said, oh, really? And then he told me the story about how I had taken 10 or 15 minutes after a show. I didn't actually remember it happening, but I believed him that I did it and taught his son how to juggle for 10 or 15 minutes. And it's when I believe it. Very important part of his life. And it actually got him his first job. He got a job in business. He got a degree in business and then was juggling. He in his interview, the interviewer said, is there anything else you want to show me? And he said, well, I can juggle. And they said, well, show me. So he grabbed three things off the guy's desk to juggle. Said, you're tired. So it became an important part of that guy's life. But anyway, when he found out that I was the guy who's, he's like, don't worry, we're going to get you fixed. I was in surgery within 5 days and I was back up on the rope in 2.5 weeks.
Wow.
After getting meniscus surgery.
The
health workers and doctors, they in no small way are magicians of our modern day. Like, it's just magic what they can do.
Yes, it is. Well, you know, I would, you know, like I said, I would give you a chance to say where you're performing in the near future, but futile at the moment. But if people go, you said your Facebook page is Philip Earl Johnson. But what's
and
your Twitter?
Mooney Magnificent, yeah.
And Mooney. And what about the Twitter handle?
Oh, I think it's Mooney Clown. If you search for Mooney Clown, something like that. I don't remember. I can never remember. I'm not good at that stuff.
Yeah, me neither. I don't blame you. All right. Well, I want to thank you both for being here. You both of you have made my day. You're the silver lining from that evil dentist. I really appreciate the smiles and the good feelings. And hopefully I'll be seeing both of you soon at some point. Anybody wants to know anything, you know where to find them. And I want to thank everybody for listening in tonight as well. And be safe, be careful, stay at home. Blessed be. And merry meet again. Good night, everybody.
The circle be open, but unbroken. May the peace of the goddess be ever in your heart. Merry meet and merry part, and merry meet again. Merry meet again. Merry meet again.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks. please join us again next week at the same time for another great guest and more cauldron stirring. Any rebroadcast or other use of this program without explicit permission is strictly prohibited.